Welcome to the Mastering Blood Sugar Podcast. This is episode number 20, Diabetes Insights with Dr. Brian Moll. My name is Dr. Brian Moll, the diabetes coach, certified and master licensed diabetes educator, and IFM certified functional medicine practitioner. Each week on the Mastering Blood Sugar Podcast, I bring you an inspiring health or lifestyle expert to help you learn to boost your metabolism, lose weight, and master your blood sugar with natural drug-free strategies. Thanks for being here with me today, and let's get started. Right. Hello, everyone. It's Dr. Brian Moll, the diabetes coach, and welcome back to another episode of Diabetes Insights. Today, I'm going to be discussing an important paper that was released in The Lancet back in May of 2018, which actually describes five subtypes or subsets of diabetes. I'm going to explain why this is important in a few minutes, but I've had a lot of people ask me to do this episode, so I thought I would sit down and record this today. The paper is called Novel Subgroups of Adult Onset Diabetes and Their Association with Outcomes, a Data-Driven Cluster Analysis of Six Variables. So what these researchers did is they looked at data from a number of studies, a number of groups, and they looked for cluster parameters, so interesting commonalities between various groups. And they tested a variety of things, including the age at diagnosis of the patient, their BMI, hemoglobin A1C. They looked at antibodies, GAD65 antibodies. They looked at insulin resistance using HOMA-IR2. And they looked at percentage of beta cell function from HOMA-2B. So really interesting study. And this is a long time overdue. I don't know that this paper is perfect. I don't know that these new subgroups are perfect, but I do think it's a step in the right direction. We've seen for years that patients with LADA, which is latent autoimmune diabetes of adulthood, oftentimes go misdiagnosed as type 2 for many, many years. We have people who are normal weight or even a little underweight being told that they can't have type 2 diabetes. We've had many patients told that their pancreas is burned out, that they're no longer making insulin, and that's why they're diabetic. I've had patients told that they were type 2, but now they're type 1, which is impossible. That doesn't happen. So I've had many, many fallacies propagated on my patients, and I'm sure many of you listening to this have heard these types of things from your doctor. So I think one of the things that this paper does is it helps to clear up and clarify the different patterns that we see in adult diabetes, which maybe will help you to get a better understanding of what you're dealing with or what one of your family members is dealing with if they have diabetes. So in the introduction, here's what the authors stated, quote, "Diabetes is the fastest increasing disease worldwide and a substantial threat to human health. Existing treatment strategies have been unable to stop the progressive course of the disease and prevent development of chronic diabetic complications. One explanation for these shortcomings is that diagnosis of diabetes is based on measurement of only one metabolite, glucose, but the disease is heterogeneous with regard to clinical presentation and progression." So essentially, there are multiple factors at play. Diabetes is a metabolic dysfunction, a metabolic disease, and there are a number of factors at play. It's not always the same thing driving up blood sugar causing diabetes. So I think, again, the value here is realizing that diabetes shows up differently in different people. And the more we understand that, the more we can actually help individuals instead of just applying the same treatment paths to a wide variety of presentations of individuals who have been diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. All right, so with that said, let's dive in and look at the data. One of the interesting things that they were also able to do is they were able to tease out certain rates of complications that were higher in certain groups. So we'll talk about that as well in just a few minutes. But let me go ahead and define the clusters that they looked at. So first of all, the old way of analyzing or typing adult diabetes was type 1, LATA, and type 2, and that was just about it. There are a few other types, MODY, which is very rare, but type 1, LATA, and type 2. So in adults, type 1 is diagnosed usually still very early in life, late teens, early 20s, and that's about 1 to 2%. LATA diagnosis, which is again autoimmune diabetes of adulthood, so usually develops a little later in life. It's a bit more slowly progressing. So the number of people getting diagnosed with LATA is 5.2%. And the rest are diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, and that's 93.6%. So almost 95% of adults diagnosed with diabetes are diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. And as you're going to see when we get into the data, that's not all that useful. All right, so let's take a look at what these researchers found. They analyzed, again, the data from over 14,600 patients from 177 different clinics in Sweden. And what they found is five different clusters or different presentations of diabetes. The first cluster is called SAID, severe autoimmune diabetes. And that would be what we would typically have called type 1 and LATA. That was 6.4%, still a small percentage, but patients in this cluster had low insulin levels, low levels of beta cell function. They were positive for GAD65 autoantibody. They had low BMI, earlier age onset, and obviously high blood sugar, very high hemoglobin A1C levels. Now, the second group they termed severe insulin deficient diabetes. This group is not autoimmune. They're insulin deficient, but they do not have autoantibodies for diabetes. They still have a low BMI. The onset is a bit later, and these folks also have very high blood sugar and hemoglobin A1C. In fact, this group, cluster 2, had the highest A1Cs, around 10.5% to 12.5% on average. And that was about 17.5% of the people. So let's just look at what we've learned so far. 6.5% have autoimmune diabetes. And again, this is adults being diagnosed, not kids. So 6.5% have autoimmune diabetes. Another 17.5% are insulin deficient. Now, in my clinic, we call those subtype I, which means that they're not making enough insulin. We call it insulin type. These researchers called it SIDD, severe insulin deficient diabetes. Now, these other three clusters or subgroups, as they call them, are all insulin resistant, and that's the other 76% of the patients. So we have 24% insulin deficient, 76% insulin resistant, and as I'm going to talk about a little later, all with high insulin levels. All right, so cluster number 3 is severe insulin resistant diabetes. This is about 15.3% of the people in the study. They had high insulin, high HOMA IR, insulin resistance, high BMI, so they were all obese, all with a, or on average, I should say, obese, had a BMI of over 30 on average, and had elevated A1Cs. Now, the A1C was not as high as in group one and two. So, group one, there was a very wide range between 6.5 and 12. Group two, 10.5 to 12.5 on average. Group three, the A1C was about 6.3 to 7.6 on average. So a little bit of a lower A1C, but very high insulin levels. The HOMA IR, which we use a range of 1 to 2 as normal, closer to 1 is better. Their HOMA IR on average was 4 to 6, which means they're very insulin resistant, very high insulin levels. Some of them, a lot of them, in fact, were as high as 10, 20, and even 30 on the HOMA IR score. Also, when we look at their beta cell function, in group one, the beta cell function was a wide range, somewhere between 15 to about 80% function. Group two, which is the insulin deficient group that is not autoimmune, they were around 20 to 55% beta cell function. So obviously their beta cells were not working as well. In group three, the severe insulin resistant group, they had 120 to 180% beta cell function. So on average, almost twice as much insulin and beta cell function as someone with normal glycemia or normal blood sugar. And there were some in this group that were as high as 300 to 350% beta cell function. And that's measured through the HOMA-2B percentage score. Now, the fourth group is called MORD, which stands for mild obesity-related diabetes. These folks had the highest BMI. They were slightly less insulin resistant, but very high BMI. So in group three, they averaged 30 to 36 on the BMI, so definitely obese. This group was 32 up to 38, so almost 40 BMI. So morbid obesity is considered a BMI of 40 or 35 or more if there's obesity-related health conditions like diabetes. So many of these people in this group we would call morbidly obese. And that's what really characterizes this fourth group. Now, they were still very insulin resistant with HOMA IR scores averaging 3 to 4. Their beta cell percentage was 80 to 120%. So some of them, which are all above normal, and I'll go over that here in just a few minutes, but 80 to 120%, and some of them as high as 200% beta cell function, which essentially means that their insulin levels were very high. So morbidly obese, insulin resistance, high insulin levels. And for this group, before I move on, the mild obesity-related diabetes, there was about 21.6% of the people in this group. And then group five, they called mild age-related diabetes. Now, I'm going to talk in a few minutes about why I actually don't like this term that they use. But essentially, these were people who, on average, were not obese. They were just overweight. And they had more mild insulin resistance, HOMA IR scores on average between 2 and 3. And because they were slightly older on diagnosis, actually about the same age as group three, but slightly older than the average patient in this study, when diagnosed, they chose the term age-related, I guess because they didn't know what else to blame it on. But I find this really interesting. This is 39.1%, so the largest group. So what this tells me is that 40%, almost 40% of adults diagnosed with diabetes are not obese, On average, they're overweight with a BMI between 25 and 30. They don't have severe insulin resistance. They are insulin resistant, but mildly insulin resistant. And on average, between 60 and 75 years old, which is around the same age as cluster 3 is diagnosed. So this myth that diabetes is just caused by obesity or even just caused by severe insulin resistance is in fact a myth. There's much more to it than that. That's why we have to look at the individual and get an understanding of their metabolism and body function. So let's look at a few other things here. First of all, they found with complications, I found this really interesting, that clusters 1 and 2, the insulin deficient clusters, had the highest hemoglobin A1c. Okay, and that's pretty much understandable. The other groups, the A1cs, were a bit lower, and actually in that fifth group, the largest percentage had A1Cs between 6 and 7.2, so a bit lower than the other groups. They found that cluster 3, which is the severe insulin-resistant group, they had the highest rates of non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, which is understandable, very closely connected to insulin resistance, but also the highest risk of diabetic kidney disease. So insulin resistance, because of those really high insulin levels, puts a lot of stress on the kidneys. Cluster 2, the insulin deficient group that was negative for autoantibodies, so not autoimmune, had the highest risk of retinopathy. Now, they also had by far the highest hemoglobin A1c. That was the 10.5 to 12.5% group. So I think we can blame that on uncontrolled blood sugar, very high glucose and A1c levels. So interesting stuff here. Now, let's take a look at the insulin resistance score and the beta cell score. I've gone over the numbers, but I haven't really given you the reference ranges. So there was a paper in the American Journal of Clinical Pathology from 2018 that evaluated a lot of data and came up with some normative data. So for HOMA IR, they use less than 1.22 on the HOMA 2 IR score, which is what they used in this Lancet paper. 1.22 or less was normal. 1.22 to 2.72 is insulin resistant and pre-diabetic range, and then greater than 2.72 is diabetic and insulin resistance. So here we're seeing very high insulin levels and insulin resistance. If we compare that to our groups, cluster 1 would be considered low or normal on average as far as the HOMA IR, so they had low insulin levels. Cluster 2 is considered normal on the insulin resistance, so they're not insulin resistant. But as we're going to see when we look at the beta cell percentage, they're very low there. Cluster 3 was the group that had very high HOMA IR, between 4 and 6, and some as high as 10, 20, and even 30. Cluster 4 had high HOMA IR, between 3 and 4 on average. That's in the diabetic range still. And then cluster 5 had the more mild insulin resistance, on average between 2 and 3. So in that, almost in that pre-diabetic to early diabetic insulin resistance stage. Now, this paper in the American Journal of Clinical Pathology also looked at normative data for HOMA 2B percentage, which is that beta cell percentage, and they said greater than 54.2% is considered normal, 34.4 to 54.2 is considered borderline, and under 34.4% is considered diabetic. So that's where there's low insulin. Now, in this Lancet paper, both groups 1 and 2 would fit into the either borderline or fully diabetic range on average. Group 3 on average was 120 to 180%, some going as high as 350%. Remember, 54% is normal. So these people are making massive amounts of insulin. Same thing with group 4. They were 80 to 120% on average, some going as high as 200%, So that could be four times as much insulin as considered normal. And group five, 70 to 105%, twice as much insulin as is considered normal on average. So all three of these groups are hyperinsulinemic, overproducing insulin, and varying degrees of insulin resistance. Now, before I wrap up, let me share a few things that I didn't like about this paper. First of all, in cluster 4 and 5, I object to the term mild. On average, the A1Cs were still between 6 and up to 8.5% in the mild groups. I don't think that should be termed mild diabetes. I also found that the authors did not really examine the fact that 76% of the patients in the group were insulin resistant and hyperinsulinemic. They described group 4 and 5 as less insulin resistant, but really failed to classify the last three clusters as insulin resistant, showing just how common hyperinsulinemia and insulin resistance is in adult diabetes. Another fact that I thought was left out, which I think is really important, is again, 76% of these patients have not only functional beta cells, but are overproducing insulin, or producing 2, 3, 4, and even 7 times as much insulin as what's considered normal. This third group especially is highly hyperinsulinemic, very insulin resistant. So I think most physicians would be surprised to learn that 76% of their patients with type 2 diabetes are hyperinsulinemic, have high HOMA-2B percentage scores, and are overproducing, not underproducing, insulin. I mentioned it before, but I also object to the term age-related diabetes, as Cluster 5's title. On average, their age of onset is pretty much the same as Cluster 3. So I would have termed this non-obesity-related diabetes, because on average, this group was not obese, but was overweight with mild insulin resistance. Overall, I thought this was a great paper, and I really think that it stimulates some more thought and some more conversation around how we are grouping or clustering the people with diabetes that we're treating and caring for. And if you're listening to this and you have diabetes, think about which cluster you might fit into. I think the most important thing is that it gives us more information about how to actually treat the person. So if we know that they're insulin deficient, then we can work with them on preserving beta cells, enhancing beta cell function, and realizing that exogenous insulin is probably going to be a really important piece of their care. But for the other 76%, we realize that they're actually hyperinsulinemic and insulin resistant, overweight or obese, and the target for our treatment shifts and changes based on that. It focuses more on reducing insulin levels, reducing insulin resistance, helping to lose weight and burn fat, particularly around the viscera and the organs like the liver. And then in cluster 5, which was almost 40% of clients, we have to look at the whole body, the whole person, because it's not just obesity, it's not just insulin resistance. Something is going on there that's causing the blood sugar to rise, and we have to address that on an individualized, personalized basis. All right, guys, so I hope you got a lot out of this episode, really important information. Share this with your doctor, with your friends, your family members, people who need to hear about this. And I want to thank you for listening to the Mastering Blood Sugar podcast. This is Dr. Brian Mole with another episode of Diabetes Insights. I'll be back next week with more great information.